Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 35. Dave, Wednesday, this is the kind of 10-day period, the two-week period, where we're going to get a really good sense of what kind of football team the Pittsburgh Steelers are. The New England Patriots come in, Heinz Field, 4:15 on Sunday, and then obviously next week the Ravens come into town. Two big games, generally perceived coming into this week that these are the three best teams in the AFC. We've certainly seen all three teams have games that they weren't pleased with, and clearly the Jacksonville game since we spoke Monday night where the Ravens just laid a complete egg, losing to the Jags 12-7 on the road, and Flacco and the offense were absolutely terrible, didn't get their first down until 5 minutes into the third quarter.
Yeah, that game, as ugly as it was fun to watch from the standpoint that you watched the Ravens struggle there. And, you know, Jacksonville didn't look like they did too many things different than what they did against us. And just Flacco just, boy, he just couldn't complete anything. I think his yards per attempt were something like a 3 point something. Yep. For the game. And that's only thanks to, you know, that late drive pretty much that he took in for the score. And I was a little bit nervous there that the Jaguars were going to end up giving that game away, especially inches away from that onside kick being good. But maybe the Ravens are, you know, they got their butt handed to them by the Titans in a game earlier in the year that many think that they should have won, and now they laid an egg there down in Jacksonville. So you know, it'll be interesting. Of course, the Steelers have business to take care of before next week, this week with the Patriots, but it's really setting up these two games to be as interesting as we kind of thought they'd be.
Yeah, and as you say, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that's two conference losses for them. Obviously, the Steelers have two conference losses as well, but if the Steelers were to beat the Ravens head-to-head, it's going to certainly put them in the driver's seat going forward here, obviously depending on, you know, what happens with New England this week and everything else. Let's wrap up kind of the game Sunday against Arizona. And the injury report from Mike Tomlin, generally it sounds like, you know, he said Hines Ward is questionable, and then some guys are getting healthy.
Yeah, Curtis Brown, the young cornerback, I'd be willing to bet he's down this week. He's experiencing some back spasms, and you know how Tomlin is with these young kids. If you don't practice, you're probably not going to play. The injury report, you know, might come up while we're online today here. But, you know, I would kind of doubt that he's going to work today or might be limited at best.
That's a great point because Tomlin specifically said, you know, the issue with the young guys, obviously, is they need the reps. So he as you say, with Curtis Brown, he specifically said if he's not getting the reps, it's unlikely he's going to go.
And let's face it, this guy's a special teamer right now anyway. Cortez Allen's been seeing the field. It's not like this guy, at least I don't think he was going to see any snaps on the defensive side of the ball against the Patriots. And if he did, something probably horribly went wrong, and it probably doesn't matter anyway at that point. So James Harrison, Chris Hope, Doug Legursky, and probably Jason Worlds are not looking good this week. Harrison, I think, told reporters today that he's having some light sensitivity problems still, and that whenever the doctor tells him he can return, he can return. So I really think that might end up being a return of his possibly after the bye week, just so they don't, you know, rush him along there. So, you know, I originally I'd hope maybe by the Ravens game, but I still think that might be a little soon. Hoke is have a nerve regeneration problem or something, according to Dale Lally this morning, with that stinger. Supposedly the latest stinger that he suffered was real close to the last one that he had earlier this year at some point. Might have been the game before against the Titans there. But he's going to be down. Jason Worlds, what can you say about this kid? I mean, kind of was hoping for him to get back. I'm willing to bet now they just let him. There's no reason to rush him back. Just make sure he's 100% when he does come back. Doug Legursky, of course, with that toe and all, he's going to be out. It's coming out right now that Casey Hampton returned to practice today with that shoulder, so that's good news, especially with Chris Hoke down. And I don't believe Hines Ward with that ankle is going to work today. He normally has Wednesday off anyway, and Tomlin said he's going to monitor him. So we'll know more over the next 30 minutes or so when the official injury report goes. But, getting Hampton back would probably be the biggest thing that we see on this thing.
Yeah, and I think it's, as we talked about on Monday, Casey Hampton against the Ravens, and just kind of segueing in, you know, to that game Monday night and thinking back in the opener, really the Ravens offensive line is not they looked so good in that first game against the Steelers. And you go back now and you just question, was that the Steelers front seven play against that line, or is there something that happened with that line along the way? Because the personnel is generally the same. They've had some injuries as well in and out of that line, but that line was really getting manhandled by the front four of Jacksonville. It will be, you know, I don't want to focus too much on a game that's 2 weeks down the road. But when we talk about the Steelers and Casey Hampton and the impact he's going to have on these two games, this is really the time to get him back and healthy. You pointed out, I think, Hines Ward didn't play in the Patriots game last year. And how much of an influence do you think he'll have on the game now that, you know, Wallace has emerged to be maybe the premier deep threat in the league, and Brown and Sanders have really stepped up their game? Are they going to really miss Hines Ward if he's not available?
Well, I think, didn't Hines play in that game, but didn't he suffer a concussion or something?
Early on, I think he got the first quarter.
Yeah, and then he left out of there. But look, I don't think, of course, you have the young receiver stepping in there, and that was key. I mean, they're a year older this year. And a lot more experience, as we've seen, and really contributing, especially Antonio Brown the last week against the Cardinals. I don't think it's a necessity that Hines Ward plays in this game. Let's face it, Jericho Cotchery was signed for Hines Ward insurance, and to me, he's an upgrade over an Arnez Battle in that spot. He knows all the positions, although he hasn't. He dropped an easy ball last week against the Cardinals.
He did.
And that's kind of concerning there. But, I mean, the guy hasn't had reps, and you have to wonder how much work he gets with Roethlisberger during practice as well. So, you know, with Ward sitting out probably most of the practice this week, he'll get more looks as a number four. I just don't think Hines Ward playing is as big this year as it was last year when they lost him in the game.
Yep, I think that's exactly right. Dave, what was your sense of the offensive line play now that you've had a chance to go through some of your work in terms of grading the personnel? I mean, clearly the running game wasn't particularly effective until very late in the game, and Tomlin talked about that as well in his press conference, that he was happy with how the run game finished the game out. We talked on Monday about there was some criticism again of Mendenhall. I'm not really in that camp. I didn't think the line played particularly well. It didn't look to me like Mendenhall was missing holes or stuttering into holes. It just looked like there wasn't much there in this game. What are your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was a roller coaster up and down performance, and I'm not through my grading yet, but my initial look of it as, you know, it was not great. It was not horrible. You know, you did have there were several times though that Mendenhall just did not have the lanes, and Mark Caballi kind of, you know, backed up my initial assessment after the game that there just weren't many creases there in the kind of recap that he does on Trib Live on his blog post as well. So they were able to get some penetration at times and just blow everything up. And you know, Chris Kimuatu, this guy, he's just inconsistent, you know, and I don't know how much the knee might have to do with it. Marcus Gilbert, I thought he played a fairly decent game. I did see Ramon Foster get blown up a time or two, and Max Starks as well. But, you know, everybody wants to complain about how much we run right, you know, as opposed to left. We're a very heavy right-handed team, and why don't we run left more? Well, you know, it's the offense is just predicated as a whole of what they do out of that. You saw in the big play against Arizona with the Mike Wallace bomb there, how that was run out of the three tight end set with the fullback Johnson back there, and basically is that look where the Steelers run out of. The linebackers come up and guess run, And lo and behold, the play was originally supposed to go to David Johnson on kind of a drag route out of the fullback position to the sideline there. And you know, Wallace, they blew the free safety Rashad Johnson not coming up to the center of the field there, and Mike Wallace had one on one on the outside with Richard Marshall. And that's just, and what I'm getting at is that it's just so many things that you can do out of that run right formation of what you do. And add on top of it that Ramon Foster is going to give you nothing really pulling to the left side from the right guard spot. And I, you know, Max Stark, say what you will, you know, bless his heart, he's really kind of stabilized some things on the left side as far as pass protection goes. But I don't think he's ready to run block quite a bit over there. So does that mean that we're not going to run left this week? No, I think we mix it in. But this is a run right heavy team, and teams know that, and they're ducking the safety down in the box to prevent it, especially late in games when the Steelers had the lead.
Yep, definitely the case. In terms of did you see the play where I can't remember, it was the sack on Roethlisberger? I don't know how many sacks that Arizona had. They have just one.
I think they didn't have two in that game.
They have two. Did Pouncey get beat up the middle on one of those? I mean, he was a guy who turned around and was facing Ben as he went down. I just couldn't tell on the play. I don't know if you remember specifically the play I'm talking about.
I don't, and I'm going to have to check that in. You know, we've got a big charting project that we do. Ben was sacked twice in that game. He did give up a pressure or two. I do remember in the middle. I can't remember if he's was to blame on that or not. Like I said, I haven't made it all the way through the film on that. That'll be out tomorrow sometime on my offensive line breakdown. But, you know, it wasn't any other bad, you know, as bad as we've seen the pass protection in the past. You know, Ben's going to, you know, as long as you got Ben back there being able to do what he does and avoiding the rush, more specifically on the play to Heath Miller for the touchdown, you know, where the guy came, you know, kind of clean there. I just don't think pass protection is our biggest problem right now. I think it's just making sure that Ben connects, and I had a post up on this just yesterday about how he has been the last three games since that start that he had, and he's really coming on hitting these young receivers, which I noted is key a few weeks ago, and we saw that this last game against Arizona where he connected with, let's say he targeted Brown and Sanders, I think 16 times, connected 12 of those. That's going to be very important, these young kids over the next few weeks, along with Heath Miller as well.
Yeah, and
he dumped the ball.
I found it amusing.
And he dumped the ball to the running backs, you know, and didn't force a few balls we saw against Arizona as well.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I found it amusing to see today how the media is reporting how basically Deshae Townsend, who's one of the assistant secondary coaches or the secondary coach out in Arizona, was just emphasizing to their DBs all week not to get beat deep, and of course, Wallace gets a 95-yard touchdown. You know, we laugh about how, you know, I want to thank Steeler Juan for correcting me on Twitter. I think I said in the last podcast that Steeler Jason, telling me that I had said 13 passes for Wallace of 40 or more yards with Ben. It is 13 for Wallace, but 11 of those were with Ben and two were with Charlie Batch. But we laugh about how, you know, you don't expect DBs to get beat, but you can't sit on off Mike Wallace either. We've seen them throw the short stuff to him where he's catching either the bubble screen or he's catching a quick slant. And again, he gets up ahead of speed at you and he's running at DBs. Well, they're going to have just as much trouble as well. So, I mean, he causes problems in two ways, and it's not just, oh, play 15 yards off him and don't let him get behind you. There are a lot of issues, and I credit Bruce Arians again for showing that bubble screen early in the season, getting the ball in Wallace's hands and showing kind of the explosive speed he has when he has the ball right at the line of scrimmage.
Well, you know, if you try to press, I mean, that's what he's done now. If you try to press, you're setting yourself up to force yourself to, you know, to have a safety help over the top there. And if you lay off of him to try to kind of come up to offer some support in the middle of the field, well, you know, that's when they'll throw that bubble screen. They threw a couple last week, I think, to Brown on one. I think Hines had one in there. I can't remember if Wallace had one in there or not. But, yeah, we saw a lot of those go for some pretty good yardage there. And another thing that stuck out with me in the Arizona game as well, you know, Ben took a lot of shots downfield against the Jaguars, mostly predicated by what they were doing defensively. I'm thinking the wind maybe played a little bit bigger role in that game than what I initially thought with his accuracy problems. But against the game against the Cardinals, I think only kind of four or five deep balls where the ball actually traveled more than like 21 yards in that game. So that tells me that you know, he's willing to take the underneath stuff now. They're going to take the shots downfield. Let's not make mistake. Even Ben Bruce Arians had said a couple weeks back that, you know, they hate to leave a stadium without, you know, trying to take four or five of those, having them in their pocket still. So, yeah, this is an explosive offense. You know, we just need to see on a more consistent basis that they do it, and more specifically against the Patriots. When you get in the red zone with these guys, you've got to score. You cannot settle for 3 points against these guys.
Yeah, no question. I think I saw the stat on ESPN today that the Patriots are converting in the red zone at about 62-63%, and they're in the top, I don't know if they were 5 or 7th, and the Steelers are not bad at 52%, but right around the middle of the league, and we've seen them be more effective here, excuse me, as the season goes on. But, yeah, as you point out, everybody in Steeler Nation is concerned about this game and concerned about the Steelers giving up 30 points. And rightly so. I mean, the stat for the Patriots that they're averaging 300. The average offense this year is averaging 367 yards and 20.9 first downs a game. And the Patriots have been ahead of those marks in each one of their six games. And they've got 25 plus offensive first downs each week. And they had the number one scoring offense last year, and they only did that three times. So, I mean, you know, when you're getting 25 first downs, you know, a game. And we know that this is an explosive team as well. I know you chart that stat, and it's a stat that you've focused on, you know, since we've been doing these podcasts. This is not a Patriots team that's just getting 3 yards and grinding out first downs. They are also an explosive team and can make big plays. But, you know, nobody has shown that they can stop them. They've only stopped themselves against the Bills, the four interceptions that Brady threw. We're going to get into a lot of this when we get to Greg Bedard, our Patriots beat writer with Boston.com. The Boston Globe is Boston.com. So we'll get into this, and we'll get into do it more on Friday. But how do you expect Dick LeBeau to scheme? We saw him get beat last year with the vertical routes. We've seen him in the past get beat with the underneath stuff. Is there anything kind of in your mind that you expect to see in terms of how the Steelers come out? You and I talked before the show here about how the Steelers might attack Wes Welker and whether Ike Taylor would be the guy who follows him around the field or not. What are your general thoughts about how LeBeau might try to scheme this game?
Well, first of all, I think Wes Welker just does so much, and it's not so much deep as it is these daggum crossing routes and all that. He, you know, able to get free and change directions so well. And even though Mike Tomlin said yesterday he does, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion, you know, that Ike follows him around the field all day, I say why not? And why not just try to take this guy and physically, you know, take him out of the game and make Brady, you know, force Brady. And also another thing I would like to see him do is take away the middle of the field, you know, easier said than done with these two tight ends that they have with Hernandez and Gronkowski. But, you know, I make Brady make his livings off the edge, Edelman and perhaps Ocho Cinco if he plays a bigger role this week. But yeah, I mean, I don't give him the middle of the field. I'm not convinced that you blitz him all that much either. We're going to ask Bedard about that when we have him on here shortly. I think if you do bring the blitz, you bring it more internally and not off the edge, because we're talking about Tom Brady here. He studies tape. He knows tendencies and all well too. He knows when a guy comes off the corner, you throw directly at that where he was. And I think you just got to, when you do bring pressure, I think you bring it up the middle as opposed to off the edges and all too. But hey, let's face it, I mean, LeBeau has not had much success, and that's why there's some worries here. And you hit on a few numbers here. The Patriots are averaging 474.5 yards a game, and that's number one in the
league. That's just crazy.
That is crazy.
It's a crazy number, Dave.
and they're averaging 6.93 yards a play, which is also tops in the league. Passing yards a game, 350.5. I mean, it's just there's and first downs game. You hit on that. They're first in the league on that, and third down percentage third in the league, and red zone percentage fifth. I mean, if there's any holes in this Patriots team, it's on the defensive side of the ball. It damn sure is not on the offense. So, and we'll break this down more in depth. But the Steelers are going to have to be able to run up and down the field with them on the scoreboard, and hopefully maybe produce a turnover or two, which is unlikely.
Dave, before we get to our interview with Greg, have you seen on Twitter this little go around with Rob Gronkowski and Triple X star BB Jones?
Just briefly, and I think didn't he come out and apologize for that today or whatnot? Is giving the media plenty to talk about, though.
It is giving the media plenty to talk about, and this is for our older viewers only. But it is on Twitter, and it's pretty hilarious. When we've seen the Steelers in the past have kind of things like this that are distractions, and do you think that stuff carries over into Sunday in terms of guys' preparation and what's going on, or is that each individual is different, or, you know, is this something that the media is going to get a lot of joy out of this, but it just has no effect on how Rob Gronkowski is going to play?
Man, that guy is a beast. I mean, he's an all-around great tight end. I think it is just different with every player and every team, how they handle it and all. Let's face it, Belichick probably, you know, he keeps that locker room pretty focused and on target and all. So I don't see it playing a big factor in this game, nor do I see the factor that Brady went to, I think it was the Bahamas or Bermuda or something like that during the bye week as well. They know what's going on. They know how important this game is. I just don't see any of this being a factor, nor do I on the Steelers side. I don't see them getting riled up about Brady's sort of comments prior to the year starting that he told an offensive lineman that don't worry about the Steelers game. I got them, pretty much insinuating that he owns LeBeau, and they're making a big deal out of that in the media as well as a strong talking point this week.
Yeah, and just a couple things that the media I thought were interesting. The Pittsburgh local beat writers, Ed Bouchette, is just reporting that Kimoatu got fined $25,000 for his two penalties on Sunday. He obviously had the late hit cleaning the guy off the pile, and then the hand-to-the-face penalty that he got. It's not surprising. You and I both talked about that on Monday. Probably the best way to get him to stop doing that stuff, as you said, hit him in the wallet. And so he got hit pretty good, the $25,000. The other thing is, obviously, the guys were in the locker room today talking about what the Patriots have done to the Steelers in the past. And I thought the Steelers, generally, from what I saw on Twitter, handled this really well. Look, Casey Hampton talked about, you know, essentially Casey Hampton said, we have to play better. These guys have done things against us. The record is the record. What's happened in the past has happened. There's no denying it. They're a good team. If we make mistakes, they're going to take advantage of it. Ryan Clark also said, they have nothing to be afraid of. But we don't either. That's the attitude a Steeler football team to take into every game they play. Look, these guys have been embarrassed. And if you're on the defensive side of the ball, they've been embarrassed. The real opportunity here, and, you know, we'll get into this, as we've said, we'll get into this more, is the Patriots defense is weak. I mean, it's just no two ways about it. They are not a good defense. And the Steeler offense looks like it's just starting to hit on all cylinders. This is a team that I think can be as explosive as any in the NFL, right up there with the Green Bay's of the world, the New Orleans of the world. You know, putting up 30 points every week is not out of the question. This is, to me, this game is all on the Steeler defense.
You got to make sure you're scoring points, as you said. The funny thing Tomlin tried to write off about their defense being 32nd, about how they've given up a lot of this stuff from behind and all, and I'm kind of working on a post or something along to kind of show that, they have given up some first half yards through the passing game. They've given up 18 explosive plays in the first half this year. They are vulnerable through the air. And now, does that mean that they're really the 32nd ranked defense in the league? Absolutely not. I mean, I don't think so, but I mean, I don't think that they're far off from the bottom, especially against the pass. So this plays right into the Steelers' hands. You know, I don't know how the Patriots are going to attack. I think they're going to try to defend more against the pass than against a run, and perhaps this is the week that Rashard really needs that 100 140-yard game here, and the offensive line really needs to blow open some holes here because, A, you know, if Tom Brady's not on the field, he can't beat you when he's not out there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. If the Steelers can dominate time of possession, 35 minutes to 25, something like that, that's a big key. Just another thing to point out, the Steelers in their 16-game season last year forced two or more turnovers in 12 of those games. They've now played seven games this year. They have yet to force two turnovers in a game this year, which is pretty amazing stat. I think they've only forced three on the season. The Patriots also, I think, have a negative turnover differential. So if you're going to point to something that two teams you look at explosive offensively, no question in my mind, as you said, time of possession and turnovers are going to be keys to this game.
And the thing is about average time of possession here, it's hard to use that as a factor with them this year. Average time of possession is 29 minutes, 25 seconds, which is 21st in the league. You know, it's because they score so damn quick. So as Tomlin said, you might have to earn this the hard way to get off the field the hard way, and that's just by stopping them on a third down or so. And, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I've got a pretty good feeling about this game on the Steelers side, but at the same time, this game can get away from the Steelers real, real quick.
Yep. Dave, great stuff. Anything you want to add here before we get to our interview with Greg Bedard?
No, let's see if the injury report is out just yet. No, the official one's not out, but evidently Casey Hampton did practice, and also check SteelersDepot.com here after a while, and I'll have all that up along with the Patriots injury report as well. So we'll be talking more about this game in depth on Friday, and we'll be getting to Greg Bedard here up next.
All right, stay tuned. Greg Bedard, Boston.com. You're listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 35. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 35. We're pleased to have as our guest Greg Bedard of Boston.com. He's the NFL writer for the Boston Globe covering the New England Patriots. Been in that role for about a year, previously having covered the Green Bay Packers and the Miami Dolphins. Greg, we appreciate you taking the time to be on the Terrible Podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Greg, when Steeler fans look at this game and when the Steelers look at this game, they look at past history kind of going back to 2001. This has been a one-sided rivalry. The Patriots and the Steelers have been the two dominant teams in the AFC, but the Patriots have really had the Steelers' number. Mike Tomlin was asked this week about how the Steelers and the guys in the locker room view this game versus the game that they play against the Ravens next week. And Tomlin's response was, there's no question there's history here. There's no question the Patriots have dominated this kind of rivalry. But it's not like the Ravens rivalry where it's a team that we play two, sometimes three times every year because we have so much more familiarity and a lot of the guys in the locker room really haven't played the Patriots that many times. What's the attitude in New England about how they approach this game and the kind of the quote-unquote rivalry they have with the Steelers?
Well, I think they definitely view it as a rivalry. And, you know, when you play each other seven times, including the playoffs since 2001, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, I would say it's just below probably, you know, you're talking recent history, the Jets is number one, and then the Colts, and then probably the Ravens and the Steelers are kind of grouped there because they do play those guys so often. But, the Steelers are one of the elite organizations. They're always one of the AFC powers. So anytime that you can measure yourself up against a team that's really good year in and year out, then, you know, you're going to view it and you're going to view it as something, you know, you want to perform really well. So I think that's the way they view it. I mean, this is a team that hasn't been challenged, you know, a whole lot. So anytime they can go against a Steelers team that on paper should be a good matchup, even though it has been one-sided lately. Patriots are definitely looking forward to this and want to measure themselves up against the Steelers.
And when we look at this from kind of 30,000 feet, from somebody who's not following the Patriots on a daily basis, this looks like two very different teams on each side of the ball. You have the Tom Brady-led offense, which is as much of a juggernaut as it's ever been, and it seems like he might be playing as high a level as he's played in his entire career. And then you have the defensive side of the ball that's given up you know, 32nd in yards against, a little better in points against. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, without question. I mean, the offense, they have basically everybody returning from last year. We figured that when Dan Copen, the center, went out with an ankle injury in week one, that could be a potential landmine for this group. But Dan Conley's done a nice job moving over from guard and playing well there. So he's actually, you know, kept the unit playing well. It helps having Logan Mankins on one side. And I think Brian Waters, the guard, who was a longtime chief, getting him, I thought that was even before the season, I thought that was going to be the biggest move. A lot of people talked about Albert Haynesworth and Chad Ochocinco, but they've had problems on the offensive line, and you see that in the playoffs, and they kind of break down. Last year against the Jets, that happened, and Waters has been outstanding since he came over. But yeah, the offense, when you have Brady, when you have the returning cast of characters, when you have the tight ends Gronkowski and Hernandez, now they're in their second season, they're tough to stop, and they can run the ball, they can throw the ball, they can do just about everything. About the only thing that they can't do is really hit the deep ball and stretch defenses as much as they would like. But I think this offense, more than anything, is predicated on a horizontal passing game where they kind of spread you out and throw quick, short passes, get the defense spread out as much as possible, and then they'll hit the seams with either the passing game or the running game once those open up. And defensively, yeah, they're very much a work in progress. This is a unit that had a tough time getting off the field on third down last year. I mean, it was historically bad last year. They've gotten a little bit better there, but the pass defense has been a huge issue. And right now it's, you know, where they stand as far as yards per attempt is 10th worst all time. It needs to get a lot better. You know, if you look at the numbers historically, they can't compete for a Super Bowl where they are, but they have gotten better the past 2 weeks, whether the Jets and the Cowboys, kind of their offensive struggles have factored into that. I think we'll find out on Sunday against the Steelers, but they definitely have a lot of work to do on the defensive side of the ball, but there is a little bit of optimism because they are getting a little bit healthier there. They have changed schemes and guys are getting more reps in it and getting more comfortable. So we'll have to see whether that improvement can continue, and it has to be if this team wants to reach a Super Bowl level again.
Greg, you mentioned about the pass defense there, and Mike Tomlin, you know, as usual per his weekly press conference, he failed to, you know, he wanted to warn everybody just because they're the 32nd ranked defense, that is mostly because they're blowing people out and teams are having to pass against them and all. But I did a little research myself after he said that, and the Patriots defense, you know, when teams are down by 10 or less through three quarters, they're still giving up a 66% completion rate and an 8.8 yards per attempt in there. And, you know, some of the stats are bearing out that, you know, the pass defense does indeed have holes. Now, are they 32nd? You know, do they deserve the tag of 32nd ranked defense? I definitely don't think so. But, you know, they also have given up quite a few explosive plays on defense, and I think I counted that they've given up 18 through the air during the first half. I mean, am I wrong to think that they can be exploited through the air, whether or not the Steelers are ahead or behind?
They absolutely can be exploited, and I think Mike's just being a little bit kind. And the truth of the matter is, they have played better the past couple weeks, but this is still a unit that struggles. They lead the league in yards, plays over 20 yards given up. That's a huge concern. They don't. One of the biggest problems that has been going on in this on the defensive side is that they haven't tackled well. Through my tabulations from watching the game, Phil, I have them for 38 missed tackles, giving up that's allowed opponents to pick up another just about 300 yards of offense. I mean, that's hidden yardage that has really been killing this team. And if you look at it, the two games where they've missed the most tackles, Buffalo and Dallas, those are the two games where they've kind of, you know, struggled to put people away, and they lost to the Bills. They can definitely be exploited. They haven't gotten a consistent pass rush. It's been okay. It's gotten better. It really hurt them when they lost a young, promising defensive tackle, Myron Pryor, to injury. They lost Mike Wright to concussion again. He's he's been the most consistent pass rusher on the defensive line for some time on this team, and both those guys have gotten out, have been out. Albert Haynesworth has missed a lot of time. When you're missing those guys, they don't have much rotation. That's really what this defense was predicated on when they switched, went more towards the 4-3 this year, is they figured they're going to stock the defensive line and get a heavy rotation and keep guys fresh, and they'll be able to generate pass rush. Well, that really hasn't been able to come to fruition except for the past couple games when they've gotten healthier. And then another significant change is in the secondary. They really wanted to be, this year, they wanted to play more man covers. They figured they would get more pressure up front, and that would allow them to play tighter press man on the outside, where normally they're zone defense. Well, they weren't getting pressure, and then the guys were not executing their jams on the outside, and guys like Devin McCourty and Lee Bodden were getting exposed. So they've actually gone back to more zone. That has helped them give up less big plays, but there are still openings. The problem is, and you guys see this with the Steelers, that if you don't get home on pressure and you're playing zone behind that, if you don't generate pressure, there are going to be openings. You lack deep integrity yep. when you play a lot of zone. And so that is a problem. So if the Steelers can't protect, that was an issue last year. Obviously, you guys know well, you know, beat up offensive line. The Patriots really got after the Steelers, and Roethlisberger didn't have a whole lot of time and wasn't that successful. So that's kind of where the Patriots defense stands. It's a work in progress, and we're going to have to see if the defensive line continues to evolve, maybe they can have more success as a whole against the pass.
And you kind of segue into a next question of mine there, talking about the Steelers not being able to get home, especially on the blitz. You have a great video up on Boston.com that you did with Jermaine, who is it, Wiggins?
Yeah, Jermaine Wiggins.
Yeah, and you broke down, some of the failures or the tight blitzes that the Steelers have struggled with as far as getting home and getting good pressure or even sacking Tom Brady. Basically, you know, the way I kind of took that is, you know, off the edges is probably not the thing that you really want to do, especially with William Gay maybe coming, in nickel packages off, of a corner blitz. Is the best way to blitz Brady going to be sort of the fire X up the middle, up the gut, and kind of let these guys play, let the Steelers secondary play man across? Is this the best way instead of sending guys off the edge?
Well, the best way that we've seen historically, and you look in recent history, you look at guys like, Rex and Rob Ryan, the way they've defended Brady, the best way actually is you have to be able to get home with four pass rushers. And I know, being a 3-4 team, that's not exactly the Steelers' strong suit. And that's been a problem. The Cowboys, we saw they hardly ever blitzed. The Jets actually used zone exchange more than anybody we've seen, even the Steelers against Brady. That was a wrinkle that we saw this year from Rex Ryan. And he's about at the end of his bag of tricks in trying to be Brady. But the key is you need to disguise your coverages up front. You need to actually drop back in the coverages, and you need to mix them up almost on every snap. And then you have to get home with four. But really the way you need to do it is you need to scheme it up with stunts so you get kind of their weakest pass, their offensive line. You need to scheme up where you get one-on-one against them, and that would be Connolly. And that would probably also be, it depends on Sebastian Vollmer, whether he's back this week at right tackle. Probably right tackle with either Nate Solder, the rookie, or Vollmer if he's back. He's has been inconsistent when he's been in the lineup. You really need to scheme it up so you can get one-on-one, your best pass rushes against those guys. That's really the best way to try to defend Brady, mixing things up and getting pressure with four.
That's great insight. We're talking to Greg Bedard of Boston.com. Greg, let's get into some of the personnel themselves. On defense, you talked a little bit about the corners, McCourty and Lee Bodden, who's actually, I think he's the only Duquesne, which is a small school in Pittsburgh. I think he's the only Duquesne grad in the NFL. And he's been in the division for a while, so we're familiar with those guys. But I know Arrington played a lot and did a lot of different things for the Patriots last year. And then you had the early second-round pick, Rozai Dowling, a young corner. How are those guys looking? And are we seeing a lot of nickel and dime packages out of the Patriots?
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of those. They barely play any base defense, and what they'll play is they'll have the four down rushers. Ninkovich, who is a strong side linebacker in their base 4-3, he kind of gives versatility where he plays the end in their nickel package, and then they have Brandon Spikes, and we'll have to see if Mayo's back this week, but if he's back, then he's in there. Probably it'll be interesting to see what they do with, once Mayo's back, what they do with Spikes, because he's not a very good cover guy.
Yep.
And normally it's Mayo and Guyton as the nickel linebackers, but Spikes gives them a lot of versatility as far as blitzing and defending the run. He's been pretty aggressive. They really turned him loose against the Cowboys for the first time all year, and he was extremely successful. I had him rated as their best player in that game. I would say, you know, Arrington has by far been the best cornerback on the team so far this year. That's been a little bit surprising. He's a guy that really rides the confidence wave. When he's doing well and he's playing well, he's really tough to beat. He's probably their best man cover guy. He's also their best blitzer coming off the edge. Last year, their pass rush was so bad, we saw them on occasion put him down at defensive end. That's how desperate they were for pass rushing. But if he gets a big play put on him, his confidence can erode and he can be taken advantage of. But, I mean, a lot of people have been picking on McCourty and also Lee Bodden. Bodden's had to deal with injuries. He looks like he's lost a step. I don't know if the bye week's going to help that, help him get healthy a little bit. And Dowling's really a guy. He was the first pick in the second round, 33rd overall, extremely talented, big. But his problem is he's been hurt. He was hurt in college all the time. He was hurt in high school. He has been hurt a lot with the Patriots. They would really like him to be out there as a starter, but he just hasn't been healthy, and we haven't seen him. He's been practicing this week, so hopefully he'll be active for the game and maybe in the lineup, because when he is, he's their best man cover guy without question.
Flipping over to the offensive side of the ball real quick, talking about personnel. Now that Hernandez is back from his short injury problem there, are they rolling out both these two tight ends, you know, good 98% of the time in formations? I haven't seen any stats or whatnot as far as formations go with them. And kind of the second part I want to kind of end with you is, how important is it indeed to shut down Wes Welker this week for the Steelers? And do you suggest Ike Taylor, you just follow him around the field this week?
Well, that's a good question. As far as the tight ends, yeah, they do. When Hernandez is healthy, they prefer to have two or even three tight ends on the field almost all the time. I mean, I don't anticipate them using a lot of three tight ends this week. And depending on injuries, you could actually see maybe Dan Gronkowski get released, for a week or so, just because, you know, it's not like they're going to load up and try to run against the Steelers. I mean, they have success in spreading the Steelers out, and I think that's what they're going to do. And teams have a really tough time matching up with those guys, you know, whether they're in line or, you know, Hernandez is mostly, you know, he's a glorified receiver.
He
plays a slot. They are extremely tough to match up against, because if you put a linebacker up against them, linebackers can't cover those guys really. And then if you put a
neither can William Gay.
Yeah. I mean, they can outmuscle the defensive backs, and we've seen that time and time again. You know, as far as Welker, you know, with as much, you know, it's really, what are the Steelers going to do against him? I mean, and against Brady, are they going to play more man? Welker is extremely tough to guard man-to-man, just because, A, he plays in the slot so much and off the line of scrimmage, and they'll put him in motion. But, B, the routes that he runs with Brady, a lot of them have second and third options where they read the defense. So if Gay or whoever is playing, you know, inside leverage, even if the route really calls for Welker to go inside, he'll go outside, and Brady will read that. It's extremely tough. Most of the time, people have had the most success having a linebacker under him and a defensive back over the top. But, I mean, even if you take, even if you take Welker out of the offense, I think that the Steelers are going to have a tough time with the tight ends. I mean, we saw last year Gronkowski with 3 touchdowns there. I mean, they are just an extremely tough offense to match up against, and that's why they have so much success. And also, you know, Brady throwing the way that he does, he's okay.
Hey, Greg, obviously in the division, we've had a lot of experience with Chad Ochocinco, and it's hard to believe that he can ever be flying under the radar. But certainly this season, he hasn't been a big target. How's he fitting into the offense? And is it I know early in the season, there was some public media, some national media criticism of his, you know, his understanding of the playbook and knowing the offense fully and doing the work to know the offense fully. How's he fitting in with the team and integrated into the offense?
He fits in with the team well. As far as fitting in with the, you know, the on-field product, it's not going well at all.
So there's no Randy Moss issues in terms of personality.
No, I don't think so. He's fit in just well, even though, you know, there's a lot of debate, and I think there's some merit into it. Is, you know, he's really tried to fit into the Patriot way of doing things and kind of curtailed his Twitter and, you know, all the other stuff that he does, his showmanship. And He even in the preseason when he scored touchdowns, he wouldn't do any celebrating. And I asked him about that, and he said, "I'm a Patriot now. You know, I play for Belichick," so he's not going to be doing that. And I think that's kind of stunted his growth a little bit. He hasn't played with very much swagger, but a lot of that has to do with he just doesn't know the playbook that well. This is a complicated offense. Has it taken longer than probably even the Patriots imagine? Without question. I mean, I think the Patriots kind of overrated his football IQ a little bit. You know, like I talked about with Welker a little bit, this offense is not only about, you know, what your designed route is supposed to be, but it's also, after the snap, reading where the defense is playing you and both Brady and the wide receiver being on the same page. That has not happened with Ochocinco. I mean, there's been a lot of miscommunication among them. Even when he has gotten open, he had a humongous drop that would have been a touchdown against Buffalo. It just hasn't gone well. Now, you know, I'll say this. It's not vitally important. I mean, a lot of people like to make it a big deal because it's Ochocinco and he's a big name and all that stuff, but I've never subscribed to that. I mean, this is the same offense that led the league in scoring last year. They're all back. They continue to lead the league in scoring in just about every other category. Ochocinco is a luxury, and would they like to have him out there taking a few more snaps from Deion Branch because he's more of a deep threat and can catch the 20-yard in route better than probably anybody else on this team? Yes. But really, they need Ochocinco in the postseason, and they just need to get him to that point, and it's almost the same with Haynesworth. You know, they're okay during the regular season. They're just fine. They win enough games. It's the postseason when you go up against better quarterbacks and better defenses where they're going to need these guys to contribute, and really that's what it's going to be all about. I mean, I don't think with the tight ends, I don't think you're going to see much from Ochocinco this week, and we'll see what he does during the regular season. But really, they're going to need him for depth and also for the postseason, so we'll have to see how it continues to evolve.
Greg, that's great stuff. Dave, you have anything else to close out with?
You care to offer us up a quick prediction here before we get you out of here? Or should they go to Boston.com? Or basically, I guess what?
Yeah, I mean, I post my prediction usually on, like, Sunday morning. But, I mean, it's safe to assume. I haven't looked at what the line is yet, but it's safe to assume I will take the Patriots because, you know, until the Steelers prove otherwise, I think that Brady and the Patriots offense can march up and down the field against the Steelers. So, you know, I look for the Patriots to win by about 10. So we'll have to see.
All right. Hey, good stuff.
Greg, do you have a Twitter account where Steeler fans can follow you this week to get updates on what's going on with the Pats?
Yeah, it's Greg A. Bedard, one word. You can find me on Twitter there. If you just Google Greg Bedard also from the Globe, you should be able to find it there.
Hey, that's great stuff. Really appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to having you on again. Maybe these two teams meet up in the postseason, and we'll get a chance to talk to you again.
That would be nice. Thanks for having me, guys.
And all right, that's clear. Greg Bedard of Boston.com, and you've been listening to Dave and Dave on the Terrible Podcast.